This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Callie Crossley. After a six-month hiatus, the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association has released its first newsletter. The publication, which is controversial for using hate language against women and minorities, was temporarily shut down. So why is it back? And is it back with a vengeance? I am here to talk about it with Chris Ferrone, who's been following this for a long time. And it came back really after a public outcry, Chris Ferrone, Boston Phoenix reporter Chris Ferrone.
Yes.
And before we get to the specifics of how it came back after the six-month hiatus, why don't we talk about why it was publicly denounced last spring?
Well, first I would say it was the latest public outcry. It's not the first. Certainly officers of color, female officers, and also just some activists for many years, decades even, have been speaking out about it's called the Pax Centurion is the name of the publication. We actually at the Phoenix have unearthed even some from the 70s and 80s, which are beyond horrific, down to cartoons depicting things I won't say on the radio. Hmm. This is something that's been going on. Thing is, a lot of the noise never really echoed outside of, the immediate, the people who are always watching city government, people who are watching the police. But this time, this past time, it did. Do you want me to?
Yeah, sure. And one of the reasons that it got passed, I think, is because it was particularly outrageous, some of the stuff that was in it. But also, in your reporting, you discovered that there were some connections with organizations that didn't know that some of the money that they were providing to the Patrolmen's Association, that's for, kids and foundation money, kids that go to school and to college, was actually supporting this newsletter.
Right. So when I believe it was the March-April edition of PAX came out, I saw it, and of course it was brought to my attention, as it always is, by some activists, particularly Jamal Crawford of the Blackstonian. And, I looked at it, and I think I was going to do a blog post. I've often done, and I almost regret it now, I used to do kind of like the greatest hits, of these things. Like it was just to show people how ridiculous what they were actually publishing in this newsletter, which is allegedly represents the rank and file officers, as well as some other first responders. So, this past time, I know I was going to do something small, but what happened was a group called Clean Up BPPA, which is the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association, which was related to Occupy Boston, started going hard after the advertisers. Like you noted, these weren't just small advertisers. These are blue chip ads, Prudential, big Converse, big companies. And a ton of them dropped their advertising. And that's what made this a story last time, because it really did reach outside for the first time.
So how's it? So they're going forward without this funding now, or what's happening here?
Well, we along with research by some outside groups, I did a lot of it on my own as well. We discovered that a lot of that funding, they were saying it was going to certain places, and it wasn't. Hundreds of thousands of dollars was actually being funneled to a felonious enterprise from outside of the city, run by two people who have actually been accused of running this sort of scam before. They have, they claim they're going to put this out whether or not they have the ads. They're claiming that their detractors are, taking away from their scholarship funds and the community work that they do. But as far as I see on the 990s, on their returns, a lot of this is a total sham. Either that, or they're not reporting it accurately. So I resent that accusation. And as far as, they're still going to, so now it's pretty much, I will say this does serve the union purpose too. Mm-hmm. It does share union issues, but in another part of it, I'd say the dominant part of this publication, it's really slandering black and female members of the community, and of especially in this last issue of the force itself.
Well, let's talk about that, because the editor really went after black and female members of the police force, of which there are not many.
No.
And the recently retired Boston Public Department Deputy Lieutenant Gladys Gaines, suggesting she did not earn the stripes that she had on her uniform, and all kinds of other stuff that was not too savory. There's such small numbers of people, and I thought Lieutenant Gladys Gaines was quite respected, so this seems out of step with
she is
people.
beyond quite respected. I'll start by saying that. She was also formerly head of the domestic violence unit for a number of years, from what I understand. So this is kind of, Jim Carnell is the name of the editor we're talking about here. We can name him at this juncture. And he believes, in my estimation, that any sort of affirmative action or any sort of...
Or what looks like affirmative action.
Anything that he perceives as affirmative action is essentially, the worst problem in the entire world. So, one of his contributions to the latest PACs is this, and I'm not going to rip him on the creative front, but it's that he wrote from the perspective of the actual, the promotions exam, which is a bone of contention among many people within the department and the city. The city is trying to work with the department right now at a cost of a little more than $2 million, from what I understand, to improve the test so that it really would help bolster the higher ranks.
Well, let's be clear. The $2 million is not just to improve the test. That seems like a lot of money just for the test. It's for a whole holistic look at why the numbers are so small and what can be done in terms of outreach and support and really sustaining officers of color and women.
Right. And I'll note that, even the parameters around that are, I didn't even want to speak to that because there's, MAMLEO, the Massachusetts Association of Minority Law Enforcement Officers. This is something that they're on top of. And, that's really for them to speak to. But as far as Carnell and from what I understand, the union, because that's what this is representing, they're just not interested. And there is absolutely, as far as that newsletter is concerned, there's no problem that we're talking with, in a city that is roughly about 47% white, 53% people of color, that, the BPD is currently, and I want to say roughly because these things change and they do, this information is not readily available on a daily basis. But, overall, about 65% white and 35% people of color, 86% men, 14% women. That's about what the BPD is. And listen, we all know, when we talk to officers, superior officers, even an officer on the street, this is acknowledged as a problem. Everybody knows it's an issue. So what I wrote my column about this week is essentially that, saying, they keep accusing me and the Phoenix, anybody who speaks against them, of trying to, step on their First Amendment right. And I, that's nonsense. That's not what the issue is here. The issue is that these words reflect an ugly reality within the department, and they do more than reflect it. They really highlight them.
Well, here's something that comes up every time we take a look at what has been written by this editor for the PAC Centurion. You've made the point that this publication also serves a purpose for the union, which is other business, having nothing to do with the editor's particular take on affirmative action or anything else, or with regard to the Boston Police Department. And it's been said over and over again that most officers don't like this or have nothing to do, don't want anything to do with it. But yet it exists and it's supported.
This is something, especially, I consider myself a union advocate, even their union. And a big part of me at the beginning of covering this said, this is especially disgusting because this union clearly doesn't represent everyone. And I don't just mean the minority and female officers who it clearly doesn't represent. Also, other officers who just aren't comfortable with it. People I've spoken with, and this includes minority officers who are extra disgusted with this, all tell me one thing, though, that they're pretty overall impressed by the work that their union actually does for them work-wise. What the intersection of those two issues are, that's for, I guess, each individual union member to consider. But, the reason there hasn't been a mutiny over, say, the money, say, the misogyny, say, the heterosexism, the bigotry, is, I think, overall that I'm certainly not going to speak for officers, but I have been told that, when it comes to negotiations, the BPPA does the job. And So that's what I've been told as to why there hasn't really been more of an outcry from within the ranks.
But just for a point of clarity, the BPPA, which is the association, could do the job but not have a newsletter that reflects something that I'm told is not shared by many of the officers but is a particular purview of the editor.
It's a given. But anybody who's seen the clip of, say, seven officers beating the hell out of the young man at Roxbury Community College a couple of years ago can see right there that other officers don't exactly make a move when somebody's clearly doing something wrong.
All right, I'm talking to Chris Verone. We're talking about the return of the PAC Centurion, which is the Boston Police the union newsletter for the Boston police officers. And in its latest issue, after a six-month hiatus, is a particular nastiness from the editor against black and female officers, of which there are very few in the Boston Police Department. And he has a particular attack against the new initiative to outreach to improve those numbers. So I guess you'll continue to cover this. And I think what's interesting to people from the outside not only is the vitriol that's represented in the newsletter, but who is funding it. And if it turns out, again, that some of the names that you mentioned earlier are continuing to fund this, you know, I think that it makes a larger statement than anything that the editor could make.
Yeah, and I think, you know, also, and I really, I'm not trying to throw the whole department under the bus for this, but yeah, it's not their problem directly, but what will be most interesting to watch in the coming months, and I hate to say years, but I don't hope it doesn't take that long, but it will, is, you know, how this process actually goes with trying to diversify the upper ranks in particular.
All right. I just wanted to switch topics because I know you just came from a medical marijuana hearing, and we did a little bit of conversation last Friday in looking at the local Week in Review, News in Review, that went under the radar with a fascinating piece, actually, that started with David Bernstein in your paper, talking about how one of the major opponents of the medical marijuana ballot initiative is now one of the leaders in shaping the regulations for what the new law will be.
That would be the doctors.
Yes.
the MMA, the Massachusetts Medical Association.
So what you hear in the hearing?
Well, the hearing is actually, this was a city council. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my colleague David Bernstein at the Phoenix, you know, we're all covering everything. He's really looking at the state. I'm looking at the city. I have the easier job. The city, you know, just to make it quick, what's going on essentially is that the Department of Public Health, state level, and what David wrote about this week is that they're already pressed on a number of fronts, is now, you know, they essentially have 120 days starting on January 1st to figure everything out, almost everything. And when I say everything, I mean, you know, what constitutes a 60-day supply, you know, certain things as to, you know, how these places, should the dispensaries be attached to the grow houses and the other operations. One thing that Boston and every other municipality does have to figure out, and Councilor Consalvo is doing a very proactive job of this, is zoning. Where are these places going to go? And in a place like Boston, this is not a very easy question.
Yes.
So, you know, the quick is that on the 13th, so I guess that's a couple days ago, the Boston Redevelopment Authority, the BRA, did decide that they're going to be pushing that it'll be so these dispensaries would be classified under healthcare, just like you know, say they're not going to be clinics, but just like a clinic would be. Mm-hmm. So they will have their own category underneath healthcare, but they will not be clinics and they will not be retail. I'm imagining that retail under healthcare would mean like a pharmacy.
Right.
So they are their own thing. So Boston Public Health Commission seems to be doing a very good job of working with the state. I'm told that the mayor, right after this passed, really got everybody together, you know, really ordered them. So, you know, from the police.
So there's a unified response.
There really is a unified response. And, you know, it passed by, it's 70% in Boston, which is, I think, believe 7 points even higher than the rest of the state. Everybody acknowledges that, you know, there's some misunderstandings. I don't want to call out the people. You know, some people at the meeting today, people are obviously concerned about, say, safety and security around these facilities. But there are studies elsewhere that actually show crime dropping in some places. There's a study I recently read about in Colorado about how prescription drug use goes down 25%, alcohol abuse goes down 25%. So there are a lot of advantages, and certainly some of the people who came on after the city officials today, people, you know, at the public hearing, testified to that. They testified to you know, some of the positive impacts. This is
and to be clear, it's you know, it makes sense. We're talking about medical marijuana, not legalization of marijuana. That doctors have a voice in this, whether or not they supported it going on the front end. I mean, they're going to be involved.
Hey, they're powerful. They're a powerful group, and you know, I don't support what their position was. I'm glad to see them at least kind of, you know, getting involved, even though it seems to be kind of advantageous.
So
to
the
them.
Pressure's on because that's not very
the
much time.
Pressure's on for everybody, and you know, I'm a critical guy. Probably most of the time I'm on here, it's not for something positive. I will say I wrote my column last week was a pretty much positive one about how city council is handling this. I really just see momentum. I think people are almost excited for the challenge in some ways. Hmm. But the zoning part really is a challenge. And, you know, one little thing is that was that I didn't see brought up, though I did miss some of the testimonies, is that there's a whole issue also with, like, federal government has been known to come in and,
right,
and close dispensaries. And one of the ways that they do that is within a certain distance of a drug-free school zone. Now, in the city of Boston, I don't know, I wrote about this years ago. I don't know the exact number. I think like 90% of Boston, right, is a drug-free school zone. So, you know, of course, there are other things that play into that. Do you see the president coming into his good friend Deval Patrick's state and busting up? So I don't know. You know, there's a million issues. And
we're going to be talking. We'll be having you back to talk about
excellent.
It.
I look
forward
to it.
I think the overriding thing is that nobody wants to be California.
Nobody wants to be in any way.
Really. Okay. All right. We've been talking to Chris Varone. He's a reporter for the Boston Phoenix and author of 99 Nights with the 99%. And he's been updating us on the medical marijuana hearings, as well as the latest from the PAC Centurion. Chris, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to another edition of Boston Public Radio. Tomorrow at WGBH, we'll be continuing our coverage of the mass shooting in Newtown, Connecticut, looking at it from various angles. Join the conversation online at WGBHnews.org. I'm Callie Crossley. Have a great afternoon.